I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Motor Mouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
Now, we are delighted to be officially partnering up with the Brain Tumor Charity. It's a cause we care deeply about, and through our specially dedicated podcasts uncovering those within the motorsport community who've been affected by these devastating diagnoses, fundraising events and generating awareness, we'll all be moving further and faster to help every single person affected by a brain tumor. For more details on how you can help, just check the link in the podcast description or head to thebraintumorcharity.org. Can you believe we're at season 6 of the Motormouth podcast? Thank you so much for your continued support. And we also wouldn't be here if it wasn't for our sponsors. This season, we're delighted to be teaming up with Grid Rival. Now, if your football mates are constantly going on about their fantasy leagues, well, now you can get your own back and create your own racing fantasies. Thanks to Grid Rival, including F1 and MotoGP, you can select your own team and drivers, interact with other fans, and join or create your own league, where you can trade on the go to make sure you have the ultimate lineup for each race. If you're as obsessive about motorsport as we are, make sure you get set up on Grid Rival today. Head to their website, it's gridrival.com, or download their app from your app store. 2021 leagues go live in February, so now is the perfect time to strategize and make sure you get a jump start by downloading the app and getting notified for when they do as the motorsport season begins to ramp up.
Hello everyone, Tim Sylvie here. Now, before we introduce today's guest, I need to head over to the land of Essex, where men are famous for having their ankles out, ultra skinny jeans, fake tans, white teeth, skin fades, loafers, no socks, plain white tees and roll neck jumpers, and not to mention a ponchon for holidays to Magaluf and Ibiza. With that said, and no further ado, Harry Benjamin, how are you?
I do not adhere to any of those descriptions. I've never been to Magaluf or Ibiza either. How sad is that?
That is sad. I spent a week in Ibiza. I barely remember any of it. It was amazing.
See, that kind of, I don't know if that appeals. Well, to be fair, actually, having done a year of lockdown now, that really, really does appeal. So get me to Ibiza ASAP. But I'm all good. It's a bit difficult to really come up with new things every time we talk like this, especially when we record multiple shows in a day. But all well, love and life good. As much as you can do. How about you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. Our third or fourth recording of the week? Second
Something
of the day?
Like, I lose track. We do too many.
I've even changed clothes, so it doesn't look like I'm just wearing the same clothes in every single podcast. I've put on the Motormouth hoodie. There you go.
On brand. Always on brand.
Bit of brand. Right, shall I introduce today's guest?
Yeah, let's do it.
So today we are delighted to be joined by former Formula One driver turned DJ Jaime Alguersuari. The Spanish-born star navigated through Italian Formula 1600 before winning the Italian Formula Renault Winter Series. He moved to British F3 alongside Brendan Hartley and other big names on his way to winning the title at 18 years old. It was while he was halfway through a Formula Renault 3.5 season that he was drafted into F1 mid-season with Toro Rosso, where he stayed for the rest of 09, 10 and 2011 before leaving the team at the same time as former podcast guest Sebastian Buemi. Like Sebastian, Jaime then made his way to Formula E before putting his efforts into music and becoming a chart-topping DJ. We're here to learn more about his amazing story. Jaime, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here with you.
It's great to have you on, Jaime. It really is. And what we like to do with all our guests is take it right back to the start to begin with, and especially focusing on, you know, how you first got that motorsport bug. You know, growing up in you're in Barcelona, Spain now, aren't you? Growing up in Spain, was it always on the radar for you from a very young age, or did you sort of accidentally fall into it?
Well, it was actually because my dad used to be a motorbike rider, and you know, I come from a motorsport background from my family. So I think he really wanted to put me into the motorbike world. But I realized that you actually get hurt when you fall down. Then I thought, okay, I think we should give four wheels a test. And it went okay. I mean, I was just a kid playing football at my free time, going to school, just started like something super easy going. And then the thing got a little bit more serious when, you know, I started to win a couple of races in Spain, like regional championships, national championships. And I went to Italy, where I started to race more internationally. And then I got in the junior program of Red Bull. So everything started to get a bit more professional, and it was a nice adventure till F1. So yeah.
At the karting level, did you already think then, yeah, I've got a bit of a talent for this, and I should pursue it? Or was it a gradual thing where you suddenly thought, actually, this could become a career?
To be honest, you know, because I think you're so young at that time. I was only 15 when I got picked up by Red Bull.
Yeah.
And I never thought I could make it to Formula One. I just enjoyed the whole thing. And I think this is the way to do it, to be honest. Whether you pursue a career in music or golf or whatever sports you do or activity you do, I think it's just about enjoying the whole thing, you know, enjoying the season, the whole period of work that you develop through your years and experience. And of course, it was not all enjoyable because, you know, being in the Red Bull junior team, it's pretty tough, of course. You know, you have to win, you have to deliver results. Otherwise, you can't continue in the program. But it went well. I mean, we did Formula Renault and then Formula 3 World Series. And then all of a sudden, you know, there was a seat in Formula 1 and they got me into it.
It's funny, the Red Bull thing crops up on a lot of our shows. There seems to be almost every racing driver we talk to has some connection to Red Bull. How did your connection arrive? How did you come to be on the program?
Well, it was actually a coincidence. It was a coincidence because I told my dad, this motorsport is an expensive sport and you need sponsors in order to compete and race. And at that time, I was sponsored by the national team here in Spain. I got some helps from the Circuit de Catalunya, from the Barcelona circuit, but there was not much help going on. So I did a couple of races in Italy in Formula Renault 1.6. I told my dad I wanted to try the last race of Formula Renault 2.0 Euro Cup. It was the end of 2005, and the race was in Monza. Before I did the race, I had to test the car in order to get a feeling and understand how things go on. So I connected with Joan Vila de Prat. He used to have a team called Epsilon, which I raced afterwards with Red Bull in 2007. And we were going to do this test in Estoril in mid-season. So it was like a one-day test. But I received a phone call from Joan saying that unfortunately we weren't allowed to do the test because the track was rented by Red Bull. They were doing this whole driver selection. They asked 50 drivers to come, and they were only selecting like four or five drivers every year. And they were doing this world selection in Estoril on this particular day. So the test was canceled. But then I received a phone call from my dad, saying that, that they had a talk with Helmut Marko, who is in charge. I'm not sure if he's still in charge of the program, but at that time he was, and he was for years, many years. He was basically running the whole junior program and, managing drivers into Formula One and basically he was stating where the drivers should go and how to, you know, how to work with the drivers on different seats and so on. So I received a call from Helmut Marko. I was already in Barcelona, and I went the whole, you know, he wanted to see me. He wanted to test me. I thought it was ridiculous because I didn't expect that phone call. You know, I was like, they called me like in the last minute. I was not even ready for it, but it went well. I mean, I did a couple of laps. I think the test was the same for everyone. It was like 5 laps, and then you put new tires, you do another 5 laps, and then you got judged, basically. and we were like 50 of us, and I didn't know the track. I think nobody did, actually. And I got selected. Me and Brendan, actually. Brendan Hartley. At that, the same year, 2005. So it was a coincidence, but one of those that ended well. So yeah, it was.
It's funny you bring that, because we had Brendan on the show as well, and he mentioned that selection day. And I think Sebastian Buemi was also, I think he was already a part of the Red Bull Academy then, but he was there as a sort of a mark for all of you lot. So it's very interesting. That was very much a big proving ground for a lot of drivers. And well, it worked out for you at that instance, and you became on board, and you went from there to, I want to fast forward a little bit to British F3. Working your way up the ranks, and you joined Carlin. Obviously, it's a really well-known motorsport team in junior categories, very successful. And it was a pretty high-profile grid as well. You had the likes of Sergio Perez, and we already mentioned Brendan Hartley as well. And you won the last 3 races and became the youngest British F3 champion, I think, it's still in history. How do you look back at that time?
Well, I think it was one of the best times of my career, of course.
Yeah.
It was karting and then British Formula 3, which, you know, I think the best racetracks are still in the UK. It's always nice to win in the UK because of the history, you know, of Senna and the racetracks and the rain and everything. It's like super epic. And I had so much fun working with Trevor Carlin. Also with Brendan, he was a great teammate, super competitive. And it was funny because Brendan was on that day in Estoril. He told me that he was waiting for this test for a year.
So wow!
A year long, that he had to go to that test and prove himself.
And you get the call up last minute.
Yeah, I got the call like one day earlier. So crazy, yeah.
God, it's astonishing. But as Harry mentions, the names that you beat there, the likes of Perez and Hartley, both have been to F1. Sergio Perez obviously just got his dream drive. Do you look back at those times and think, oh, I wish I'd kept going longer in my career? Or do you feel sort of at ease with the fact that you did what you did, you got as high as you could, you got out, and now you're doing something completely different?
I think both. You know, it's funny you mentioned this because obviously, you know, when the Formula One dream disappeared of my life, I felt it was a very difficult time for me because I was expecting, you know, I went out in the best moment of my life.
Yeah.
Not just technically and professionally, but also mentally. You know, I was like really, really ready for a competitive car, and I knew I could really prove myself and be in the very top. But, you know, life is like that, and we can't judge the whole trip, the whole experience I've lived in racing. It was amazing, and it gave me, like, it was my whole university, you know, that's yeah. the thing I've got.
Mm.
Now I'm in something so different, which is music, and I look back, and everything happened so quick. But it was a hell of a ride, you know. It was great. It was amazing.
That point where you were racing in Formula Renault 3.5, you're halfway through the season and you get the call, Jaime, we want you to come to Toro Rosso, jump into the seat halfway through the year. You must have known that you were going into a team that wasn't necessarily a front runner. Did you think, yes, this is the moment I've been waiting for, here we go? Or did you think, yes, this is great, but a little bit apprehensive that you're stepping into a car that doesn't quite do you justice?
Well, at that time, I think I wasn't really ready for Formula One. I think Formula One now is very, very different to the past. I think experience is something super important. Testing, you know, like understanding the tires, aerodynamics, how everything works. It's very different to junior series, junior categories. Yeah, of course, at the end of the day, it's a steering wheel and two pedals, but it's something else. So first thing I've noticed is like, I might not be ready to do a 70 lap race or 2 hour race. So that's the first thing I got in my head. But then 2010 was completely different. And then 2011 was even more different, especially the second half of the season. But yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because at the time when you joined Formula One, you were the youngest ever driver. And I think the first driver to be born in the 1990s to join Formula One. And now it looks like they pluck them out when they're 16 years old and stick them on the F1 grid. So how do you look at it now when, you know, the drivers seem to be getting younger and younger?
That's what I meant. I mean, it changed so much. Even if you look at junior categories, when I used to race, or Brendon or Checo or all these drivers, Grosjean, Hulkenberg, Bianchi, and Buemi. All the Formula 3s, Formula Renaults. I remember, like, it was very tough because, like, there were drivers that they were racing for, like, years in those series. You know, like, they were staying for, like, 2, 3, 4, even 4 years to be front runners. So they, at the end, they become competitive somehow. And then when you look, I mean, I don't want to, you know, it's a very, it doesn't mean that now it's worse or better. It's just different the way that the whole motorsport activity has changed. And when you look at the junior series now, all of them are rookies, or, you know, like, they're on their first year. So everything happens, like, there are no cycles, you know, they're just, everything happens so quick, and they upgrade themselves into other series super quick. You know, it was very different from the past. But also, if you look at Senna's time in the 90s or even in the 80s, you know, Formula 3 was also very different, and they were staying there for many years till they upgrade into Formula 1. So I think it's just the way junior categories have changed, and also Formula 1 rules, I guess. You know, everything has changed a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking to, who were we talking to earlier, Harry? Günther Steiner, there we go, about Formula One and the challenges that it has in this modern era with money and the cost of entry and, you know, the advantage that the likes of a Mercedes has in terms of financial, in terms of revenues and money to spend on their development, as opposed to a Haas, for example. Which will hopefully level out with the cost cap, but also the challenges of getting into the sport as a driver. You got in through Red Bull backing because you had talent. How do you view some of the guys that get there, not necessarily based on talent, you know, that perhaps have to buy their way in more? Is that just something we have to accept in Formula One, or is there a way around it?
Well, you know, I'm going to be very, very clear with this. You know, I think the situation has been every year more clear through the years. Of course, Formula One has always been a place where, you know, it has to be a win-win situation for everyone, of course, you know, for the teams and as well for the drivers. But there has to be something proportional in between. There has to be something that makes sense. At the moment, it's just overrated. You know, the cost cap should have happened many, many years ago, and not now.
Yeah.
It's too late. And that's how I feel. I mean, I understand teams that ask for money because they just can't make it, because the more you spend on the car, the more the car is going to go fast. And if you have a driver coming with 20 million euro to pay for his seat or even more, it's going to make a big difference on the team and on the salaries of people. And at the end, it's a company that has to go, that has to move forward. But what is the problem? That if you don't get the right sponsorship, which doesn't look like, because I've never seen in the story of Formula One, like McLaren, I've never seen the empty side put that they were running, I think, 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think McLaren never raced with an empty side pod. So this is already an indicator that Formula One is going through a difficult period, and this should never, ever happen. So my personal view as a racing driver is that I felt very frustrated. Obviously, when you're in the Red Bull universe, you don't actually notice, because your career gets paid by the company. You just have to deliver results. You don't have to beat your teammate. You have to be as quick as you can. And then, probably you might have a chance to make it. Sometimes it doesn't even happen, but you don't get to see what's going on after Red Bull. But then when I was out and I got asked for money to race, I asked myself, do I belong to this whole system? And does this system belongs to me? So the answer was no. I thought, or at least I was wishing, that we could talk Formula One like tennis or golf and stand a ranking and judge drivers for their skills, for their abilities, for their work, determination, yeah, whatever you want to call it, and not just for their money, So it is very sad and it is frustrating, but it's the way it is. And hopefully they can make a solution. Hopefully the cost cap helps everyone, especially the lower teams, to have more margin in order to sign drivers for their skills and abilities, of course.
I think you've described that and you've said that so well. I really like the idea of a ranking system as well, like in tennis. I think that would be a great idea for F1 drivers or motorsport, every racing driver. Let's talk about your final year in Formula One in 2011. That was your best year in terms of results. And you had a hell of a run mid-season and towards the end. You were looking great. Were you confident that you'd done enough to secure your future, or were you already aware that things were changing?
No. Absolutely. I was 1,000,000% confident that I was continuing in Toro Rosso, of course. The thing that I was a little bit embarrassed, which obviously, it was very frustrating, is that I got an offer from Renault, three races till the end of the season, to be Kimi's teammate. Because Kimi was coming back rally into 2012. So I turned that down because obviously it was really clear that, we were putting the car in the top 10, like super consistently beating teams that they were spending 40-50 million euro more than us. We were beating Mercedes, Lotus, etc. And it was like very clear that the whole thing was working out. We did a great job. Of course, it is also true that we were struggling at the beginning of the season because I had to understand the tires. It was the first year with the Pirelli tires, and degradation was super high on the racing. And then we did a change of setup. I understood the whole thing, and everything came together from, I think, the eighth or ninth race till the very end. So, I was really, really, really surprised. I've never, never, ever forget that day, that phone call at 8:30 a.m. on the 16th of December. So it was not nice. It was really like, oh, my God, you should, like, there was no need to do that in that way. But that's the way life is. And I think, many people can say something even worse. Like, there's always a worse solution. And that's the way it went. So it's just accepted.
Did they give you a reason?
No. it was sad because, with France, Tost, I have a decent relation, let's say. I mean, I went last year to... I kept myself pretty away from Formula One after that, even though I did some commenting and so on. Mm. But my girlfriend last year asked me to go to the racing in Barcelona. He wanted to, she wanted to see the race. And so I said, okay, let's go. And I went to, I went to the Toro Rosso garage. I was with Franz and, we both hug each other and so on. And I was like, shit, this guy... 9 years ago, he called me to, basically tell me that I was not racing for them anymore, and he shut down the phone. So, it was like really dry and very, I don't know, it was strange. It was weird. But that's the way it is.
Mm. A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsors, GridRival. GridRival is an absolute must for any racing fan. I've been looking to join Fantasy Motorsport Leagues for ages, and GridRival does that and so much more. With an experience like no other, real-time fantasy games, the best content, and a community of fans, GridRival is a must for 2021. Get ready for the motorsport season with GridRival today. Fantasy Leagues go live in February, but make sure you head to their website, gridrival.com, or download their app from your app store so you're in pole position for when they do.
Oh, it's brutal, isn't it? It's such a shame as well, because it's not like, you know, there are some drivers that come into Formula One, whether they're pay drivers or not, who just don't cut the mustard. They don't deliver. And it was such a pity that you were delivering and you'd done so well in the junior categories. You were, you know, a talented driver that was destined to do good things. And to see you leave before you'd even had the chance to show
what
you
could do. Didn't know about the Renault Lotus deal either. That's gutting. Oh, that is gutting.
So gutting. A real, real shame. My overriding memory of you is when I saw you race live once in Suzuka. And it's funny. It's not a pleasant memory for you, because it was the year that you crashed badly in Suzuka. And you the reason I remember it so well is because I was working with ING Bank at the time, managing their sponsorships in Formula One with Renault, and also various racetracks, of which Suzuka was one. They were the title sponsor of the track. And you went crashing through their ING branded hoardings on the track before you planted it into the wall. So it was kind of a big deal that all the ING people were like, yes, great exposure for the brand. But it's got this overriding memory of you. That's the last thing I remember of you in Formula One. It was funny. But a real shame that you left the sport at that point. But you weren't out of motorsport. Formula E appeared on the radar. When did that first appear as a series for you? And I guess at that point in time, Formula E was in its infancy to a degree. What did you think about it first and foremost? And how did the opportunity come about?
Well, the thing is that you know, after what happened in Toro Rosso and Red Bull, I've never expected that phone call. That was terrific for me. That was really, really painful because there was no margin to get a seat for 2012.
Yeah.
So Paul Hemery from Pirelli called me to test tires for them, which actually was a very good idea, because at least I got to be in a race car, in a Formula One car, and do some mileage, which was super interesting and super important to understand the tires for the coming season. So, but that didn't change much, because at the end of the day, you know, I was talking to different teams and they were both asking for something that I couldn't have. And basically after that, I my head was off. Like, I did some racing, you know, I did Formula E first season. I tried touring cars, but I wasn't there, you know, like my head was out. Like I was already thinking in something else. I've always grown up thinking I want to be the best at my sport, or at least try it. And when you reach your peak and you're still, you know, taking off, and on your, you know, ascending to your peak performance, you don't expect to stop. You know, you expect to continue, and that actually really, really hurt. I didn't want anything else than Formula One and being in the top five. You know, and becoming world champion, because at that time, Red Bull had the car to do it. So after that, we did Formula E, but, you know, it was a very completely different approach to racing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really motivated to keep on going, to be honest. I was enjoying much more racing go-karts than not doing other racing series, to be honest. Nothing was really pumping out, you know, and that's the reason why I called it a day and I went out. I retired, you know, when I was 25, because it was like you know, I started when I was 8. I was putting my helmet on and with a big smile. I'm not smiling anymore. So what's the reason why I should race? Mm. Is it a question just for money? And I know I'm not going to give my 120%. So I said, I think there's much more to life that I can do. I'm still very young. If I don't do it now, I might not do it ever. There's like music, which is, you know, amazing for me. It's like a hobby. And I really want to produce music and release music as a, you know, as a newcomer. So there was so many more appealing things in life that I really wanted to pursue.
Yeah. And fortunately, you had that plan B, which we will come on to. But before we do, I'm going to pass you over to my illustrious colleague because we have a little quiz for you all about yourself, and some of your old teammates are on the leaderboard, so we'll have to make sure you beat them.
Yes, hi, Mial Gashwari. Welcome to the hardest quiz in motorsport, Motor Mouths. There are four questions that we have for you, but they're all about you and your career, so your F1 career. So essentially, you should be able to get them, but it doesn't always work out for some people. At the bottom of the list, so with 3.5 points, is Karun Chantop. So if you beat him, you're fine. If we want to go higher, we're looking at, I suppose, David Coulthard's got 10 points. Buemi has got 11, but Brendan Hartley, now he's in fifth place with 12.5 points out of 14. So I think we're going to aim high.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It's been a while. It's been a while. Okay, well, the first one is a clip that we want to play you. So have a listen to it and then just tell me, see if you could fill in the context of it. What are you talking about? Where are you, etc.? So have a listen to this.
Here it comes.
Give me a big help, and that's what happened. I used all DRS, all cars, 100%, and I could manage to pass him in the last corner, in the last lap, which I was not expecting that.
I don't think any of us were. You came past at tremendous speed. You must have had a real smile on your face seeing that.
Yeah.
He's got it.
I think that's Korea 2011.
Yes, Korea 2011, correct.
Nico Rosberg.
Yes.
Passing him. It was it the final lap?
That was incredible because, well, I will never forget that overtaking maneuver because actually he was a little bit faster than me, but like in Korea there's a straight which is like super long straight, and I thought, okay, maybe if I press, if I release all the curves after turn one, you know, normally you manage curves on different corners. But I said, okay, let's try because it's the last corner, so you have nothing to lose. There's no one behind. So I said, okay, let's release curves 100% and then let's get the DRS out and see what happens. And then I got like this amazing speed, like 30 km/h more on the whole straight. And I was seeing, like, I was looking at Nico's car and I was like getting him so hard. And I went through the outside and I was like, oh my God, I made it. I don't even know how. Like, this is amazing. So I got a 7th place in there. It felt really, really great.
And you're still scoring points from it today. That is a full 3 points for you. Well done. Okay, second question for you. Now, 2011 was your best season, as we discussed. But what is your best race result?
7th.
And for an extra point, can you tell me what races you got that in?
That was Monza, Italy, and Korea.
Correct.
Absolutely. That is the full house. Okay, we're doing very well here, Jaime. Okay, number 3. You raced in Formula E for the first season, of course, but what was your best result there and where was it? What track was it?
Oof, that's going to be a bit more difficult. Because it was a nightmare of a race. I think the best result came... It was not a good result, actually. It was a 4th place.
Yep.
Correct. I call that a good result.
I should have won that race because it was if you look at that race, it was a nightmare.
Like, right.
Crazy. Like all Formula E races, like you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was in Argentina.
Yes.
Correct. That is a full house. Yeah, Jaime, it's looking good.
Come on.
It's looking very... Right, we've got one more question and then there's a bonus point up for grabs. So here's your 4th question. Now, when you entered your first Grand Prix, you made history, as I said at the start of the show, by becoming the youngest ever F1 driver. You were 19 years old and 125 days, apparently, according to Wikipedia. But Who beat your record and how old were they?
Verstappen beat the record. It was I was 19 and he beat the record with, I won't know the days.
No, that's fine. Just the year.
Pretty sure he beat it with 18 years old.
Oh,
he was 17.
There goes the podium. There's the podium gone.
No, I'm going to give you 2 points for that out of three. So, because you got him and you weren't far off. We need you to get high up on the leaderboard here. Okay, bonus point for you. How many drivers in total have raced for Toro Rosso?
Give me a minute.
Feel free.
Jot them all
do
down.
Do some counting.
We can play some lift music or something at this point. Sometime later.
Oof. That's going to be tough.
And you could include yourself in this, of course, as well.
Right? I cannot guess.
You know what? I will give you two either side. If you get within two, I'll give you the point.
I think it's between 13.
I'm going to give you the point because it's 14.
Very good.
It's 14. That is. So it's Albon, of course, yourself, Bourdais, Buemi, Gasly, Hartley, Kvyat, Liuzzi, Ricciardo, Sainz Jr., Speed, Verne, Verstappen, and Vettel.
Okay.
So just if you wanted to hear that again. But that gives you 1 point in the bag. So let me just do the math.
That's a good result.
It's a very good result, Jaime. It's a very, very good result. But I'm really sorry to say you're half a point behind Brendan. You got 12 and he got 12 and a half. But it does put you right up there. You're just ahead of Mark Webber. So you can take satisfaction from that.
I'm happy. I'll sleep good tonight.
That's a solid effort. A very solid effort. Now, we mentioned before the quiz that you did have a plan B. And as Formula One and motorsport started to fade away from your life, your other love appeared, which was music. And just take us into this world of music. You know, we're looking at you now. Our listeners can't see you, but you look like you're in a sort of music studio kind of setup there. Where did this love of music come from? What sort of music is it? And how does it play a part in your life now?
Well, it all started with my friends in Ibiza, actually.
Hey!
My parents used to go to Ibiza since 1975. And they got me like when I was like super young, and they used to go every summer in there. So I made all my friends in there. Ibiza has been always like the home of electronic music, especially in the summer season. And I got to play some records with my friends in a basement. And that you know, I had the chance to travel to Italy, to the UK, to Germany for racing. So I had some time. Or I was making that the time records on my free time. And it was a really nice period of time because record stores were at that time strong before the internet came super strong. And it was really, I had great memories of buying like vinyls and, you know, like all these amazing records. I still have them and play with them. And it's really cool. So, you know, music was there since a very early age. I started making music, like producing music on my laptop, like sending demos to independent labels from 2008, 2009, making music on my spare time whenever I could, like really basic stuff. You know, like whenever I listen to my first tracks, it's like very different to what I do now. That's what it's all about, you know, when you start something and you develop it and you get good at it or you get better at it, it's nice to see the whole evolution, you know, and the development. So, you know, when I was out of Formula One and I thought, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Because I'm not really feeling racing anymore. Or I'm not feeling racing as it was in the past. So I really want to give music a go. I'm going to go for that. I love music. I want to try. I want to test. I want to prove myself. I want to see where this takes me. And so far has been amazing because obviously, you know, I've spent like loads of hours in the studio playing with synthesizers, with machines, drum machines, working with other musicians, with singers. And it has been amazing. I've released a lot of music under my other name, Squire. I wanted to make sure I didn't mix both things. So I released music as Squire. And now this year, unfortunately, we had a pandemic going on. So now music is being really, really affected. So no festivals, no club music, no parties happening going on. So this year I had in mind to release my album, which is going to be my first album of 11 songs, which is very different to what I normally do. It's something more personal, something more pop, or let's call it, like, it's difficult to categorize music nowadays, but it's something like more freestyle, you know, with more emotional. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm starting my own label called Animes as well. And yeah, I mean, it's very different to racing. It has many things in common as well, but it's just another period of my life, another stage of my life, another chapter, which is fantastic, which is great. At the moment, actually, I'm already thinking on, I wanna be back on a go-kart, actually. And I never thought I could do that. And I've been testing go-karts. So, you know, it's like,
well, Jaime, we've got in the summer, hopefully COVID dependent, once it's all out the way, we've got our own karting, a celebrity karting event. Feel free to come over and join us. We've got loads of drivers coming. If you want to join in, you're more than welcome. We'll talk about that offline. It's funny though, your name is familiar in motorsport circles, and racing fans and my peers who are in motorsport know your name. It's a familiar. You've been out of the sport for a few years now, but people still know who you are. Do you still get recognised? Do you get picked up at, like, you know, music festivals that you're playing at or whatever? And people are like, "Hang on a minute, you were in Formula One."
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it was a shame because actually, people in Spain, especially, people recognised me like, "Oh, what a shame! What happened to you?" Yeah. And it was a bit frustrating because every time I got to meet someone, they were saying that the same thing. They were like, "Oh, how sad was the whole situation? Oh, what a pity, or whatever." And I was like, "Yeah, I know, but it's what it is. I mean, like, look, I had a career in Formula One. I did, like, I scored 31 points. I know it's like other drivers did many more, but I feel super proud with what I did with the car I had and the conditions and the technology we were running at that day. So at the end of the day, I think it's just a question of feeling free and feeling like in peace with yourself. And I think music helped me out a lot on this whole mental aspect, you know?
Yeah, I think the way you talk about it is really really nice to see. You know, it's a really mature way of talking about it. And because it was, you know, those people who probably did feel quite bad for you at the time. But, you know, you had that extra passion and you used it as a way of sort of getting through to your next chapter. And you turned that into your second career. And you're absolutely right. Not many people get a career in Formula One. No. It's a lot of people's dreams. And some people don't even get to that. To that level, so that's an achievement in itself. Obviously, you've been away from the sport. I know you were a pundit for a short while after you originally left F1. But do you still keep an eye on motorsport day to day? Do you still watch races? Are you in the loop with modern F1?
Yeah, I mean, I had a period of time where I completely quit everything. I felt like this. How do you say, like, I needed a distance from motorsport and to feel myself like away from the whole motorsport world. But I'm back to it now. I mean, I feel proud of everything. And I look back at my career and I can talk about it openly. You know, I've went through it. It was still a shame, of course, but I've realized that the whole thing was great to live. And now I can look back at racing. I went, I took my girlfriend to the race, to Formula One last year. I was there. I didn't even feel uncomfortable. You know, I shake hands with Christian Horner, with Helmut Marko, with Franz Tost, the people who didn't want me there. And it was all good. It was fine, you know. So I think that was... I've put that in my bag, and yeah, like in the past, yeah, you know, So yeah, I think I'm in a different mode.
Yeah.
Actually.
Now, although you're in a different mode, now one of the reasons why I really wanted to get you on, because I was looking at your Instagram and I did see, you know, you posted a little bit of your F1 car and you were starting to do go-karts, and I was thinking, is there a comeback on the cards?
There might be, actually. That's why I was... and that's the thing, you know, now I feel so different. Like when I see my interviews... And when I see my body language, my behavior when I was a race car driver, I feel so different. Probably age and, you know, maturity and education. But I have to say that the fact that I was out of Formula One and I was in connection with the real life, with the real world, because I do not consider Formula One is living the real world, you know, when you manage and you work with all this money and figures and all these luxuries and so on, it made me much more human and much more realistic of what's going on. So I feel like now I can see motorsport on a very different perspective. And if I might think of a comeback, it would be just to enjoy. And I would see it on a very different, of course, I would like to be competitive and to be in the front and to win, because I'm always like that. I hate losing, but yeah. But I would manage the whole situation with a very different perspective, or at least this is how I feel.
Is there a category that you've got your eye on?
At the moment, I'm enjoying like go-karts, which is for me like the feeling of driving a shifter go-kart is like super similar to Formula One, with the grip levels, with the torque and the reaction time. Everything is like super connected, you know, and it made me a smile the other day, because, you know, it's been a while I didn't drive a go-kart, and when I went out for the first lap, I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. I forgot that feeling, you know, of freedom. So yeah, that made my day.
Were your family quite supportive? Because obviously your dad was really involved with motorsport and he wanted you to become involved. Were they supportive when you decided I'd had enough?
Yeah, well, I think at the beginning he didn't want to see it, or at least he didn't want to believe it as much as I did. I think as a parent, you want the best for your child. You want the best for your son. And my dad, of course, he's not, he, you know, if I want to make a career in music or whatever, he will support me. But of course he has racing in his blood. And he would be delighted that I would make comeback, I'm sure.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. This is it. This is the start of Jaime back in a Formula One car with Red Bull.
Let's see.
We have a final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, and they throw up varying degrees of answers. Harry, do you want to kick off?
Yeah, Jaime, what's got you excited at the moment?
Well, at the moment, of course, music. But I have to say, I'm playing golf as well. So, you know, honestly, like, it's frustrating now because music is not moving much at the moment. Yeah. You know, there's nothing happening. So once I've retired from racing, I've really pushed myself to in the studio to make music, to release music. It's been already like 6 years. And now, since last year, everything has stopped. Indeed, my album is going to be is called Stop. So that's the reason, because everything is stopped. And I didn't expect that. Nobody expect that. So, you know, I'm seeing my friends a lot. I have a beautiful life. I'm doing conferences. I wrote a book 2 years ago. I'm doing like all these conferences around the book in Spain. I have many projects in my head, and now I might... You know, I'm training hard. I'm testing with my go-kart, but I'm enjoying life. You know, I'm enjoying life as I never did. So, yeah, I'm enjoying everything. Yeah.
Brilliant. Second question for you of our final three: how much of your success do you put down to luck and right place, right time, and how much down to pure hard work?
Well, I think it's a mixture of both. You have to be. That's for sure, you have to be at the right place at the right time. That being said, you know, like many drivers have been world champions because they've been at the right place at the right time. But there has to be a lot of work and the talent has to be there. Otherwise, you cannot be a champion. And it's not just talent, you know, there's like all this hard work behind the wheel that makes you different to the rest and makes you, you know, like the one to win. So yeah, there's much more than that.
Mm. Okay, well, final question for you, Jaime. What are you scared of?
Of the COVID. Yeah, no, well, of the vaccine, I would say, honestly, there is no real scare, but it is like, I can't believe the situation we're in. It's like super frustrating for everyone, super unfair for all of those who are suffering of this. We are all in this bubble of news and things happening that every day is something new and all these now changing every day, super difficult to predict. So we are living a very terrible time. And this is like, it's really painful.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
It hurts. It yeah. hurts.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really, really wish that we could learn a lot from this and we could be back stronger and more united, you know, to work maybe more as a community and not that much as single people, you know. So yeah, let's see. I mean, it's tough, but hopefully we get back better than we were.
I think you echo a lot of people's thoughts there. Ever thought about going into politics, Jaime? I think you'd be great.
No.
Well, listen, Jaime Argashoy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on the Most Math Podcast. Thank you for chatting us through your F1 career, your reasons for leaving and what you've gone on to do since as an incredibly successful DJ. And we can't wait. We'll be the first people on that Jaime Argashoy comeback train. Don't you worry. But Jaime Argashoy, thank you so much for coming onto the Most Math Podcast.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out the team at Grid Rival, the place to be for the 2021 motorsport season. If you think you really know your F1 and MotoGP, fancy yourself and making a bit of extra cash, setting up your own or joining a fantasy league, and making sure you have the best driver lineups for each race, all whilst getting access to the best motorsport content and chatting to like-minded fans, then Grid Rival is the place for you. Leagues go live at the end of February, so make sure you're at the front of the queue by getting notified as soon as they're ready by heading over to their website gridrival.com or download their app from your selected app store and get prepped for a brand new season of motorsport with Grid Rival. Now, if you're a really lovely person and fancy supporting the podcast further, just head over to Patreon or the link is in the podcast description. We've got some great goodies and bonus content to give you if you sign up. Just search Motormouth Official on Patreon and there are three levels of membership to choose from. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.